what you're talking about is a relationship. And that's what we do that people don't really understand, because we went through this huge age of like internet travel booking, right? Now it's kind of starting to bounce back the other way.
There's over 1.9 million podcasts. Most of them never see the results they expected. They want to monetize, but their show ends up costing them money, and they never achieve the listenership they desire. This show will help you launch, grow, monetize, and inspire with your podcast. Get ready to take notes, because here's your host, Adam Adams.
Welcome back to the Podcast on Podcasting. I'm your host, Adam, AAA Adams. I'm here to help you be able to be a better podcaster and be able to grow your influence and start doing more business. And today I have Sarah Groen on the show. I'm excited. Sarah, tell us a little bit about your podcast. And actually, I have three questions for you. And I'm going to ask you all three, and I'm going to try to make you have to remember them all. I'll put notes in as well, but I want to know who you serve, how you make money, how do you serve that person? And then I want you to tie it into why you started the podcast to serve that person.
Sure, of course. And thanks for having me on, Adam. So how I make money. So I own a company called Bell & By Travel Design, and we are advisors for sort of high-end travel. And our avatar is an executive or a successful entrepreneur who essentially has more money than time. And so what we do is I say that we're an addition to their professional management team, like their lawyer or their wealth advisor, but we're just a lot more fun. So we can plan trips for our clients to Mexico for a short weekend getaway, or, you know, take the kids out of school. Let's do a 6-month around the world trip. And we need a nanny and somebody doing a curriculum for the kids along the way too. So we can do anything in between. But what we really like to do is have these longer term relationships with clients so that we can remind them and say, hey, we know you really wanted to accomplish that safari before your oldest graduates from high school. That means we really need to start planning it next year. So just FYI. And so we like to, that's why we call ourselves advisors, and we kind of like span that time. So that's the avatar. And then the second question was, how do we serve them? I kind of went into that a little bit as well. So, you know, we serve them, I think, by, in addition to just planning trips for them, we are really looking out for their best interests. And we're providing really high-end, bespoke, and super custom things for each client.
Well, don't mean to interrupt you, but I am very curious on how you make money with them. Does the, you know, high net worth couple, attorney, whatever, who wants to take a really nice trip with their family, do they pay you a fee, or is it the hotels and other places that you're booking these travels with? Are they paying you the fee?
It's both, actually. So the traditional, so we've sort of taken like the traditional travel agent model of old was commission-based, and we still take advantage of those commissions. So say, for example, you were going to book a Four Seasons hotel. If you book it through us or directly, you're going to pay the same price. The Four Seasons will pay us a commission out of their marketing budget. But if you book it through us, you'll also get $100 resort credit and free breakfast and possibly a room upgrade and VIP service, because, you know, I've built a friendly relationship with the GM over time, or had them on my podcast or whatever it is, right? So that's kind of how that piece works. And then we do also charge our clients fees. We do it on a per trip basis. So it's not like a retainer model or a membership model or anything like that. It's like, okay, we're going to work on your next trip. Like the fee for that trip is X.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And then, so let's talk about how the podcast serves you into your business and what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, so I will say that the idea for the podcast kind of came up independently of just a pure business motive. So one of the really fun parts of my job is that I get to go visit all these amazing places around the world and have, at this point in time, a ton of Zoom meetings with people around the world and really get to know in depth a lot of these top properties and top destinations. But when I'm doing that, I get to hear these really cool insider stories like, hey, the countertop at the reception desk of this hotel in Tuscany is actually Carrara marble. And that Carrara marble was mined from the mine like 40 miles away where the owner's great-grandfather used to be a miner in 1904 or whatever. Like, they tell us these cool details all the time, which the travelers never actually get to hear. So I kind of thought, I had it in the back of my mind, hey, I really want to tell these stories. I just didn't know how. And to be frank, I didn't have time because we were just exploding at Bell & My Travel, just trying to keep up with taking care of our clients. So then COVID hit and I thought, okay, well, I've had this idea sitting on the shelf for a while. Like now might be the perfect time to actually do the startup work. I mean, starting a podcast, at least for me, was almost like having another little mini startup within my company. So we had some time to do it. And how I think it fits in is I think it serves my clients because if they're going to a particular destination or going to stay at a particular hotel, I can say, hey, I don't know if you've been listening to our podcast, but check out this episode. It's like me chatting with, you know, the owner of the hotel that you're going to stay at. Not only does it make the client really excited about where they're going to go because they hear these cool stories, but yeah, it makes me sound like a total expert that I'm like buds with the owner, right? So I think that's one way it really fits in to the business. And I think there are others, and I think there are more that I will see and I'll get over time as well.
That's really cool. And I like part of your business model is that it seems like you are able to really connect with a lot of these really nice, fancy places. And it sounds like in doing so, you're able to go and visit. And a lot of that is, you know, business expense for you, which saves on taxes. Some of it might be business expenses for the hotel, which might save on money as well. It just sounds like a lot of fun. So I want to just find out a little bit about, you mentioned that the podcast felt like it was kind of launching a business within a business. And that brings me to a part where I think every podcaster has a little bit of reservations between starting a podcast. And every new podcaster goes through some learning curves. And a lot of those lessons that we learn as we're starting a podcast can be really tangible and beneficial for somebody else who's going to be jumping into it. So I wanted to find out, what's one thing that you really struggled with, but you've overcome? I have another question that's going to talk about maybe a challenge that you have now, but what's something that you struggled with that it was scary for you? Some people worry about imposter syndrome. They worry about all sorts of things like that. They're not sure what kind of mic to have. What's something that you struggled with, but you were able to overcome it and it's no longer a problem for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think so. The pieces that are harder for me are the technical aspects, right? I have worked at startups before and launched products. So having a launch timeline to say, I am going to launch this podcast by the end of Q3, and here's my backwards working plan to have it, that all comes pretty naturally. What was harder for me was the actual technical pieces of it. And so what I did is I actually signed up for a podcast course. I did Podcasters Paradise with JLD. And so I watched, you know, all those videos. I was like, okay, Sarah, you may not have to do it. You can hire somebody to do it, but you at least have to watch these. So I watched them all. And then I also, just being an entrepreneur, I kind of knew this from past lives, but if anybody is listening who hasn't been an entrepreneur before, like, done is better than perfect is the mantra you need to have. And so I like kind of fell into that mode pretty quickly. I was like, okay, I'm going to get the mic I can get, because a bunch of the mics people recommended were sold out at the time, because everyone was launching a podcast during the beginning times of COVID. So I got what I could get. I watched the videos. And then I asked all my friends who have podcasts who they use to edit, and I hired someone.
So you have a lot of friends that have podcasts too?
Yeah, I have a few friends who do. Okay. And I'm in a network of a network called Dynamite Circle, which is sort of a network for location independent entrepreneurs. We have a forum. And so, yeah, I posted, I asked people for advice and for help and who has a good editor they could recommend. I talked to two or three different editors. I had one that I thought was pretty good after talking to him do a test episode. And it was great. And we talked about working styles and we went from there.
That's cool. I cut you off though. I think you had somewhere that you were going and I totally derailed it. Do you remember where you were going, or should we jump on to the next question?
No, I think that was it. I just think it's the technical piece was the hardest for me, but I knew it was going to be. So I did the basic beginner stuff. I said, just get a little bit of a basic education and then farm that out, right? It may be different for someone who podcasting is their only thing, but I also still had a business to run. And so, you know, for me as like an entrepreneur and running a business, farm out everything I'm not good at and or Smart. Somebody else could be better at and or I don't like doing, right? So even on the travel planning side, my top travel coordinator is fantastic with details, which I don't like. And she's better at it than me. You surround yourself with people who are better at certain tasks than you are.
I love that. I also wanted to ask you about something that maybe you're still struggling with today within podcasting, whether it's finding the right guests, which I don't think is in your case. I think you're finding great guests. But if there's something that you're still working on that is a struggle, scheduling things, whatever it might be, is there something that is still kind of, you know, I want to think like a bane. What is it called? Is it called a bane?
Like bane of your existence?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there something that you're kind of still working on?
Yeah, I think the point is there's always going to be something to work on, right? It's like get it launched and then improve from there was at least my strategy. So there are a lot of things. After launch, I hired somebody else to help with managing, who's also doing EA work for the rest of the business as well. So my first project after launch was like get a really good process in place to where launching episodes come up on Wednesday mornings. I go to bed on Tuesday night. I'm not even thinking about it anymore, right? Because she loaded it up the prior Friday and I know it's ready to go. The LinkedIn content is ready to go. So my first project was like, I think everybody else's first project is like, let's get the sound perfect. Like, let's, and I'm like, no, process needs to happen because if it doesn't, I'm going to get busy. January and February are busy season in travel planning. And it's going to fall off the map. And the last thing I want to have happen is to not be consistent. So yes, we're always working on things. That was our first big project because in the beginning it was kind of like, it would be like Monday or Tuesday. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, I have to get the show notes page up and I have to do this. So the first thing was process. The next thing for us really is going to be audience growth. We're in a really niche segment and we're getting some good downloads for a brand new podcast, but not growing a ton. So we're seeing fairly good numbers on a regular basis, but it's not going up. And so what that tells me is the people listening are my already existing audience. So the people who are seeing it on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and who are our clients, right? So my big challenge right now is like, how do I get this to new audiences?
Mm-hmm. Got it. I love that. That's a huge one. And I think you're not alone. I think there's a lot of people that are like, our shows can become stagnant over time. You know, like, just like you said, sometimes I know a lot of new podcasters and like the only people that listen to it are their mom and dad, you know, and some others where they grow to maybe 20 to 100 regular listeners that download every episode, but it doesn't ever get bigger than that. And they're wondering like, kind of, how do I get it to the next level? I know it takes a lot of marketing, a lot of unique things to be able to put that podcast in front of new people. It is something, as somebody who does a lot of marketing for other people's podcasts, I've noticed a few things that seem to work. And so if this is for you, Sarah, and any listener who kind of feels that same way, what we've been doing a lot is I've noticed that if you do a lot of private messaging, you get a pretty good result with people actually listening to the show, giving a rating, giving a review. And those ratings and reviews and everything actually hit some algorithms within iTunes. So if you can like maybe control a little bit of that with growing your audience, even with people that you know, that's one awesome thing that can really throw you in front of a new audience, because iTunes starts to recognize it, or Apple Podcasts starts to see that you're getting more traction right now. And mm-hmm. a lot of times they'll push you in front of a new audience. That's one of the tricks that we do when we market other people's shows is we utilize a series of questions that we ask different people, depending on what the show is all about. Some are about real estate or entrepreneurship or whatever. And until we can connect with a lot of people that are kind of in your network to get them to download a few episodes and give an honest review, that seems to really make a big difference. There's a lot of other, you know, advertising that'll also benefit the listener if they're going to do it, like Facebook ads and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, things we can do on LinkedIn. But those private messaging, like one-on-one phone calls with people that you have some type of relationship with, can hit some algorithms within Apple. So even some of our clients, they go from not being ranked and they just do that one thing and all of a sudden they're being ranked. So that could be huge. I want to ask you, because I think it's important. You have this great show. When did you launch it?
September 16th.
And it's only been around for a few months and you're loving it. But I want to know, like, what do you love most about being a podcast host? what is the value that is really coming into your life because you started this?
Well, one thing is I love sales. I'm just sort of like a natural person who gravitates towards sales. So every time I get a new guest to say yes, I'm like, yes, I got a really big one who said yes this week. So I won't say yet because we haven't recorded yet. So just in case, but you know, just like a total icon in the travel industry. And so for me, that part's really fun. And then the conversations themselves, right? So it's not the one thing that is nice about what I did is it's not a topic that I started a podcast on that I think other people should hear, but I'm not super passionate about it. I'm interviewing the guests and I'm like, what? I'm just like so into it. I can't believe I'm getting to hear some of these cool insider stories sometimes. And then of course I get to connect with them like before we record and after we record and keep in touch with them afterwards as well. So it's kind of like making more friends around the world and learning more about travel than I could even in my role as a travel advisor alone.
That's awesome. And I think that it's funny. I have just one experience that might not resonate perfectly with you, but I think it's interesting. I host a conference once a year, not about podcasting, but in a real estate space. Mm-hmm. And we hosted it at a hotel in 2019. And what was kind of cool, and I'm sure you get this type of experience all the time in your field, is because it was a big conference and hundreds of people there and we were ordering food and rooms and things like that. We end up spending, a good six figures at the hotel, and the owners, they just said, hey, we've got another hotel up in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and anytime you come there, we'll just take care of you. The cool experience is that what ended up happening was better than just getting a free hotel, which is what ended up happening. But we actually got a hotel during a time of COVID back in June that nobody was even allowed to travel unless you were traveling for work. But this couple was like, all you need to do is just sign this one waiver. We'll get you in. You don't have to pay for anything. And that just came because of a connection through my business. And I assume that you get perks like that as well through what you're doing. Is that accurate? And if so, do you have any cool stories for it?
Yeah, one of the perks of the job is getting travel perks. So a lot of hotels will have something they call advisor rates. And so you can ask them like, hey, I'm going to come and stay and whatnot. And everybody uses it a little bit differently. I mean, it's in my business, I really treat it as a business. I'm not going to ask a business kind of proposition. I'm not going to ask a hotel that I would never recommend to clients or I would never sell to clients for advisor rates. Like I view it as like they're giving me a discount so that I can come and learn about the property and then do a much better job of helping clients understand what they're in for if that's a place that they're going to go. So there are perks, but I take it very seriously. Like I want the partner of mine to get an ROI from that as well. But that said, there's also perks for our clients, right? Like what you're talking about is a relationship. And that's what we do that people don't really understand because we went through this huge age of like internet travel booking, right? Now it's kind of starting to bounce back the other way, where at least at the executive and entrepreneur level, when they're too busy, there's way too much information online for you to plan a good trip by yourself to sort through, unless you're going to spend 20, 30, 40, 50 hours on a particular trip. And so at first our clients come to us for the time savings, and then they realize like, oh gosh, like, wow, I just got to have a drink with the GM at, the one and only Mandarina because he was on Sarah's podcast, or, get to go visit the school at Sol y Luna in Peru with the owner and the person who started the foundation because of the relationship that Bell & By Travel built with them. So it is about relationships in the travel industry, which when we went through that really transactional phase of like 90s, 2000s, 2010s of just online only booking, I was the same. I never used an advisor before I became one. Now I'm like kicking myself with it. There are some perks for everybody involved due to relationships.
Awesome. I want to ask you what kind of advice that you would give to somebody like a listener that is wanting to start their own show and they want to be able to have a really good show. What advice would you give to somebody new?
Yeah. Well, I guess just to quick start, my two favorite sort of like pithy quotes, I already mentioned one, done is better than perfect. So keep that in the back of your mind. And then what happened for me is actually, I don't know if you can see this book behind me that's open. I randomly was flipping through this book while I was doing the podcast, when I was like going through my podcast plan to get started. And I found a quote that's a full page quote that says, you have to be willing to be bad at something to get good at it. And I left it open on that page, and it's just been in my office open since then. And I would, every time I felt frustrated with like, how do I edit this? Or how do I do an ID3 tag or whatever it was, I would remember that quote. So that's one thing. And then the other thing I think that I did that really helped me is I made myself a launch plan. And it's something that I did when I worked at Uber and we were planning to launch Uber Eats in Houston. Like we had a super detailed, like, you know, 500 point, 1000 point, whatever, all the steps that need to happen and when they need to happen in relation to each other in order to hit, you know, a date that we were pushing out to the press, like Uber Eats is coming to Houston on XYZ date. Like you can't miss that. Yeah. So, you know, the lucky thing is that in podcasting, it's like your own podcast. So if you miss it, that's fine. But, and the number of steps that you have to do is way, way, way smaller. But what I did is I said, I'm going to draw a line in the sand for myself. And the podcast is going to be launched by the end of Q3. And then, and I stuck to that, right? I pretended like I had this like, you know, press announcement or whatever that was going out about it. And then I worked backwards from there and I figured out what I needed to do. So sort of like the first, let's call it like first couple weeks of the quarter, I just did a ton of learning. So I watched like as many videos as I could, that Podcaster's Paradise, and chatted with friends who had podcasts and all of that. So learning first. And then, you know, I had a really long running Google Doc where I wrote like, okay, this is what my show description is going to be. This is what's, you know, I had all the different pieces. By this date, you have to write the show description. By this date, I have to have the artwork done. By this date, I have to have scripted my About Me episode. By this date, I have to have set up Libsyn. By this date, I have to have recorded and edited my About Me episode. This date, I figured out I can't do the editing by myself. I have to like have interviewed 3 editors or whatnot. So I just made in Excel, it was super basic, you know, 40 lines long, all the different things I need to do and what the due dates were. And then I knew if I could hit those due dates, I would have no problem launching by the specific date.
Awesome. Okay. So what are the major, this is like a detailed launch plan, maybe not as detailed as bringing Uber to Austin, I think it was, but within a launch plan, you mentioned a few things like, this is the day that I have to have 3 people interviewed by, this is the day that I have to have this by. What are a couple of things that really stand out that any listener definitely needs to have? Like, what are some big pieces to that launch plan that the listener is going to need to follow through with?
I mean, you could also subset those into buckets, right? The big bucket too is like the premise of your show, your avatar, the name, the artwork, like all the stuff about like what the show is, the vision and the mission behind the show, that probably has to happen first, right? And then there's the technical bucket where it's your editor, Libsyn, your process, how you're going to set everything up. And then there's in that technical bucket, there's tiny little things like submit your RSS feed to Apple, submit it to Stitcher, submit it to Google, like, right? Like all those things that you want to do. And like, oh gosh, I found out Apple needs to be submitted like 4 days or 5 days before I'm actually going to launch, just in case, and all of that kind of stuff. Website was a big one for me. That was a really long lead time. So it was in technical, but that was something that needed to start early, the website for the show notes. And then there's the different bucket would be the marketing bucket. So what's your launch plan in terms of marketing? So, you know, I had like some pre-tease announcements and launches that I was going to do on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook, because those are my bigger channels. And then I had like what I'm going to do the day before launch, what I'm going to do the day of launch, like all that kind of stuff laid out as well.
Good stuff. Yeah, that's really valuable. I think that a lot of people, not everyone, but I've known many who've completely skipped the vision and the mission. Like they go to that ready, fire, aim versus ready, aim, fire, just getting it done way too fast. I agree with you. Get it done. Done's better than perfect. But I have known several people that launched a podcast, but they didn't really even have that clear vision of who they were really attracting. So I think that it is critical that that's the first thing. And I like how the second big bucket was all the technical stuff that we're all going to have to do. And that third one was really that marketing piece of the launch plan. There's a lot of people that they think that it's going to get to where they want by just pushing, you know, putting it on Libsyn. For instance, you said you use Libsyn because that syndicates it across all these other platforms like Spotify and Apple and, you know, name them all, iHeartRadio, they're all on there. But I liked what you said. You kind of take that into your own control where you're putting out teasers ahead of time. You're talking about the show ahead of time. You're really doing some marketing and drumming up the interest prior to it going out rather than just literally putting it on Libsyn and being done. Those three big buckets that you mentioned, I think are really, really valuable. So go ahead.
I will say I left one big one out. Guests and interviews. So to launch a podcast, you need to have something edited and recorded. And so throughout that time too, I did reach out to guests. That was my favorite part. So that was the part that sort of came easy. So I didn't have to like really lay it out and like, you must do this. But it was really helpful in being a forcing function for me to lay out the vision and the description, because I was pitching to these like fantastic people who were probably going to be like, I'm going to come on this podcast before you've even launched. They can't even listen to any episodes. So I had to come up with all that stuff. Like, this is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to professionally produce, you know what I mean? Your podcast. This is the description. This is the artwork. Make it look like really official. Put together a really nice PDF that I could use to send out to potential guests. And so... yeah. So that was a whole nother thing, like getting guests and starting to record. So that's another bucket, which probably should not leave out.
By the way, thank you because you came on this show before any episodes were published. So yeah, I realize that is a tough piece because there's people that ask me about this show and they're like, hey, I looked you up and I found this podcast, but it's about real estate because I found like a different podcast. What do I have to contribute to a real estate podcast? They'll say, and I'm like, no, trust me, I'm doing a new podcast. And so it is funny because you're right. When the listener starts their own show, there's going to be a few people. And one thing that we suggest is you have at least 30. I don't know if you, Sarah, went to 30 or if you do it differently, but we always try to say, if you're going to launch, have a backlog of episodes. And so for me doing that, there's going to be at least 30 people like you who agree to come on the show before there ever is a show, which is kind of interesting, something that we all have to go through. Some of my takeaways from as you were talking about going through that launch plan are, I did talk about, you know, the vision, the mission, the technical, the marketing. But I love that quote that you had. You got to be willing to be bad at something if you want to get good at it. I think that's really inspiring. And that shows all of us that it doesn't matter what it is that we're jumping into. What's that one show that came up recently? Queen's Gambit. And everybody now is wanting to play chess. But you're going to suck at chess regardless at the very beginning. And I remember when I started playing my mother years and years and years ago, I was really bad and I always lost. And then I started getting good at it, but it was because I was willing to put in all that work. And so I think that is a perfect example of what it is with our podcasts. There's going to be a time that we feel awkward, that when we're launching a podcast, that we're not sure what to ask, how the flow is going to be. And we've got to be okay with getting through the ins and outs of it, because eventually we're going to be crushing it. We're going to have a podcast that has, you know, hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of listeners to each and every episode. And we're going to be growing. We're going to be making money with our podcast, monetizing, having fun, but we all start somewhere. So I love that. And for you, what it really took is you said you had to draw a line in the sand, you know, say you're going to get it launched in Q3. And then you reverse engineered it. That's what I call it. You said working backwards from there. You reverse engineered the steps. And I guess you used a Excel spreadsheet or something similar. And you had like 40 plus different steps that you needed to do. And you ate an elephant one bite at a time. You took care of it until, you know, you're a full-fledged podcaster who's adding value to your listener, who's adding value to your other avatar, which is the actual hotel. And I think it's amazing. I think it's just inspiring. Any listener has definitely gotten a lot of value from this. I had a question that's less about podcasting and more about your business. Why is your company called Bell and Bly Travel.com?
So Bell and Bly Travel, first of all, I liked that it was alliteration. When I was trying to come up with a name, I wanted to name it after, a lot of travel advisors just name it after themselves. I wanted a sort of a name with a little bit more longevity and a little bit more applicability. If I, you know, want to hire other travel advisors to work with me, for example. So I was looking for explorers around the world who inspired me to see what a good combination of names could be for that. And I found these two explorers, Gertrude Bell and Nellie Bly, who were explorers from the late 1800s, early 1900s. Gertrude Bell is basically, she was like the female Lawrence of Arabia. That's what everyone calls her. But really, she was actually much more prolific than Lawrence of Arabia, as she went all around the Bedouin tribes in the Arabian desert and then was hired by the British government to draw the lines that then became the countries in the Middle East. I mean, we can argue that maybe it wasn't done so well, but she was the world's expert. She was the only person who could even come close to doing it correctly. One of her nicknames actually is the Kingmaker, because that then decided which families would become the royal families in the Middle East. And then another one, Nellie Bly, she was actually an American journalist. And that book, Around the World in 80 Days or something, came out. It's a fiction book. It came out right around her time. And she looked at the book and she was like, I could do it faster than that. So she went around the world in 72 days, and she wrote about it for her newspaper, and she sent stories back the entire time. So named after those two ladies.
That's cool. That's awesome. So that link is in the show notes, and also the link to your podcast is in the show notes. But if the listener wants to connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, through our website, there's a contact us button. It goes straight to me, or catch me on Instagram at Sarah with an H goes global.
Sarah with an H goes global. Awesome. Thank you for jumping on the show with me and adding value to the new podcaster and the growing podcaster. I really appreciate it. I'll let you go, but until next time, see you later.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam.
You know, I really don't say this nearly enough. I don't mention this, and I feel horrible, because it's a great resource for you to be able to take your podcast to the next level. And it's simply a free resource that I don't need your email or anything. It's just a podcasting course that I created that is ended up putting in the very first 6 episodes of this podcast. So if you haven't checked it out, definitely going to want to just check out those first 6 episodes, see how they can help you improve your podcast, get in front of more people, and have a better result where you're making more money through the podcast, etc. So much can happen after you listen through episodes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So if you haven't done it, go do it now. And by the way, if you're subscribed, you'll keep hearing more great content. So to those of you who are, I'll see you on the next episode.